7 o'clock in San Francisco and the West Coast, and time for Minds Over Matter. Dana Rodriguez, Pauline Teichman, and Jerry Nachman will match wits with listeners on the Bay Area's favorite quiz show. Our telephone number is 415-841-4134 with your answers and questions here on Minds Over Matter.
If you ain't wrong, you're right. If it ain't day, it's night. If you ain't sure, you might. It's gotta be this or that.
Ladies and gentlemen, your moderator, Dana Rodriguez.
Thank you very much, and welcome everybody to Minds Over Matter. We hope you had a very pleasant weekend, and weren't too busy with Christmas shopping. And we hope you can give us an hour of your time tonight, because Minds Over Matter is an audience participation quiz program. So if you would care to call and participate, that would be very helpful to us. The number is area code 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. We'll be giving you questions on current events, movies, history, literature, television, radio, and just about everything else. And please give us a call, 415-841-4134. I misspelled something. There we go. And let's see. I do want to remind you of our email address, which is mindsovermatter@yahoo.com. Again, that's mindsovermatter@yahoo.com. And if you would care to listen to us online, you can certainly do that anywhere in the known world just by going to kalw.org. That's kalw.org. And we'd like a podcast of this show. It should be available afterwards, also at kalw.org. So again, that number to join us is 415-841-4134. We're going to start with round introductions, and here's the first. Jerry Nachman finds it hard to contain his delight at Princess Kate's pregnancy, but he's doing his best.
Oh, thank you.
Wow, you're not responsible. You don't even know her.
We went out a couple times.
Oh, did you? Yeah, okay.
In honor of this second night of Hanukkah, Pauline Teichman is going to try to let her little light shine bright on Minds Over Matter. Mm.
Our moderator, Dana Rodriguez, has been consulting his fiscal cliff notes for easy answers to the financial crisis.
So,
let's hope that little light lasts for more than 8 days.
Oh, yes, since this is the second day of Hanukkah.
It's the second night.
All right. Jerry Nachman, the least observant Jew in the world, and Pauline Teichman,
well,
I guess you're the more observant. Anyway.
Well, I observe other Jews.
All right.
Commemorating.
All right. And so happy Hanukkah, everybody. We hope you are enjoying yourselves on the holiday. Again, the number is 415-841-4134. We have lots of lines open right now. It's a great time to get in. Please give us a call as soon as you can. Actually, Jerry, you know, one of the top-rated shows on TV is Revenge, and who should be on it the other week but your old girlfriend, Adrienne Barbeau.
Really?
Yeah.
My old girlfriend.
She plays the mother of one of the main characters on the show.
What is the show called?
Revenge.
Yeah. Is this a cable show?
No, it's on ABC.
Oh.
So,
how's she looking?
Not bad.
Not bad.
Not bad. How old is she now? What do you say?
Well, 60
maybe?
Probably 64. 60, between in early 60s.
Early 60s? She looks okay.
Yeah.
So, of
course, she had a good head start.
Thought of you. But
yeah, thank
anyway,
you.
It's your turn. Go ahead.
I have to call, give her a call. Okay. Let's see. Okay, well, I got a couple of Christmas questions. What year, this is all, you know, within our 10% rule, what year was Christmas first recognized as a national holiday? And when was the first Christmas card created by Sir Henry Cole? And finally, who gave us the familiar image of Santa Claus as a portly fellow with a long white beard and a red stocking cap?
The last one I know, and
that's
Thomas Nast.
Thomas Nast,
the cartoonist for the Harper's Weekly.
Right.
And
the first card, I'd say, like, maybe 1890?
No.
I think it is Victorian, though.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say 1840.
Very good, 1843.
Okay.
The same year Dickens' Christmas Carol was published.
Right, Yeah, okay, I knew it was Victorian.
Very good. Okay, so I'm just looking for the first one. What year was Christmas first recognized in America as a national holiday?
All right. So you want the year, or is it okay if they give you the... Was it declared a national holiday by the president, and was that...
Well,
was it that
not, kind of okay, thing? It's a little vague about that. I don't know if it was an actual holiday that people took off, or whether it was just recognized as a, quote, national holiday.
Okay. All right. And Pauline, why don't you go ahead?
Okay, well, since you're covering Christmas, I'm going to cover Hanukkah.
Well, that's appropriate.
So, on the dreidel, there are all kinds of dreidel games played, and traditionally there are four letters that appear. Nun, He, Gimel, Nun, He, Gimel, Shen. There's one place in the world where a different letter appears instead of the Shen. Why?
Shen is a letter, right?
Shen is a letter.
What's that, S?
Yeah, like S or Sh.
Okay.
I want to make sure I didn't miss anything. Go over the whole thing once more.
Okay. On the dreidel that internationally the people play, there are four letters that represent a phrase, actually, and the letters are Nun, Gimel, He, Shin. In one particular place, the fourth letter, the Shin, is replaced by a different letter. Why?
It has nothing to do with the Haitians. Why? In one country...
In one particular place.
Well, what place? Okay, but not necessarily a country.
I would think probably the whole country, but a specific part of the country for sure.
Okay. Hmm, all right. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
This is a guy from San Mateo.
Hello.
I got a couple questions for you.
Okay.
The first one is, what pop group was named after a bowling alley in New York?
What?
What pop group was named after a bowling alley in New York?
Bowling alley. How old is this pop group?
Give you a clue. They were the subject of a Broadway show.
Oh, well.
Oh, the Four Seasons?
Yes, give yourself a bell.
Good. That was the name of a bowling alley? All right.
Yeah.
Good.
Here's my second question. Paul Venn did the voices of voiceovers in three Hanna-Barbera shows, but only one of the shows with he actually received voice credit. You know what it was?
I didn't, because you've said
it
again,
again.
Yeah. Well, Paul Lynde did the voices voiceovers at Throne, Freehand series, but received credit at only one. Do you know what it was?
Was he the one that played the, no, I was going to say that alligator.
No, he was, it wasn't Wally Gator.
Okay.
What show? I missed that.
Paul Lynde was a voiceover actor on three Hanna-Barbera shows.
Oh.
And...
I can't think of one.
Was the Flintstones one?
No, not the Flintstones.
Well, that's good. Yeah. Gavin suggested Top Cat.
Nope, not Top Cat.
All right.
Jetsons.
Nope.
Quick Draw McGraw.
Nope.
No, we don't know.
It was Where's Huddles?
Oh.
Never heard of that.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, that was their prime time. That was Hanna-Barbera's last, last prime time animated series. It ran in the summer of 1970. He did the voice of something at Quad Christmas. And the other series he did the voice of was for were Mildew Wolf and the It's the Wolf segment, the Cat and the Cats, and Sylvester Sneakley, the Perils of Penelope's Hit Stop.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Okay. Let's see here. Two questions. Who was the first British author to be knighted for his literary work alone? It's a very famous person. Who was the first British author to be knighted for his literary work alone?
Why do you include the word alone?
Well, because there were a couple people who had...
Writers and politicians.
Writers and, yeah, but they were done. They were knighted for more political reasons.
I see, okay. So, gee, how far are we going back? Give us a century.
Not as far back as you would think. I mean, it's within the last 200 years.
200 years.
Okay. Yeah. But a very famous name.
Kipling? Was he knighted?
He might have been, but he was not the first.
That's not far
back,
no. I don't think. Yeah.
All right, once more. Who was the first British author to be knighted for his literary work alone?
Alexander Pope, is he within 200 years?
No. No, he's not within 200 years, but it wasn't him anyway.
Okay.
And second question, who was the only president who was Time's Man of the Year before being elected?
Oh, good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's...
Usually it's the president that becomes the Man of the Year when they get elected.
So he, for being a senator or a governor or something else. Huh?
Yeah, or some other reason.
Oh, what would that be?
Right.
So maybe a military thing?
Maybe, yeah. It's conceivable.
Oh, yeah, well, Eisenhower.
Yeah, Eisenhower. Right.
Thanks.
Okay. So once more, yes. So Eisenhower was the only person to be Time's Man of the Year before becoming president. That was in, actually, 1944. All right.
Was he Man of the Year after that?
Yeah, he was Man of the Year in 1959, too.
Oh. Do you know every year?
No, I know. I don't know every year. But I happen to look at the list today, so I know
that. The kind
of
thing you would know.
No, I would not know that. Okay. So I still have one question left from my Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade questions. Who was the first television character in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade? To have a float, you know. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, one of the things in the air.
And it's a single character. It's not like a pair.
Single character, yes. Who was the first television character to be a balloon in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade? What's that?
Howdy Doody.
That's a good guess, but no.
It's probably...
It's the same general era.
Yeah.
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 So.
Television character. Is that a human being or is it a cartoon?
It's not a human being.
Character.
Yeah, it's not a human being.
It's not a human being, yeah. Is it an animal character?
No, I'm not going to break it down by piece by piece. Again, so who is the first television character to be a balloon in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade?
And what about Rin Tin Tin?
Not Rin Tin Tin. And who was the first British author to be knighted for his literary work alone? And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Eileen in San Jose.
Hi, Eileen.
I'm a member of KLLW.
Well, thank you very much.
And for the record, I knew the Eisenhower question.
Well, good.
Anyway, deduce that. And I do not can tell you about the dreidel.
All right.
Oh.
So the letters Nun Gimel Haitian stand for, translated, a great Neska Dol Hayasha, a great miracle happened there.
That's right.
Israel, it's... A great miracle happened here, Nes Gadol Hayapo, so the last
exactly
letter
right.
of the shin is pay.
Ah, very good. Thank you.
We should have logically guessed that, of course.
That's a woman who knows her dreidel.
Yes.
Thank you.
Definitely more religious than either
can
of
you sing the dreidel song now?
Oh, I can sing several dreidel
songs. That's okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. We're here every Sunday at 7. Hope you're enjoying the show. If you'd like to call in with a question or answer, the number is area code 415-841-4134. Again, that's area code 415-841-4134. Let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, is that me?
That is you.
Oh, I've got through quickly. All right. Take a shot at the author to be knighted. Could that be Dickens?
It is not Dickens.
Okay. I'd like to ask you a question now.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to give you the names of three people, very well-known people, and I'd like you to tell me what very important thing they have in common.
All right.
Okay. First one is John James Audubon. The second one is Edward Lear. And the third one is James Bond, not the fictional one, but a real person. Mm-hmm.
Well, the real James Bond was wrote a book about birds.
Oh.
He was a bird, the birds of the...
America.
No, it wasn't. That's Audubon.
Yeah, that's Audubon.
Birds of America.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And the real, it was birds of, I want to say like the Caribbean
birds
or Jamaica or something like that.
Birds of a feather, yeah.
How about Edward Lear?
Well, Edward Lear, did he write a book specifically about birds?
The owl
and the pussycat?
Well, that's not what I'm looking for.
But they all wrote books about birds.
Well,
sort of.
Okay, you nailed the James Bond. But you haven't told me enough about Edward Lear, what he has in common with these two people.
What did he have in common with them? Did he do...
In terms of drawings?
Did he do his own illustrations? You're right, right.
Well, he was an illustrator, but I need to know more.
Did he collect stuffed birds?
No.
like Norman Bates?
No, you're kind of dancing around it.
Well, I don't know. We don't know, then.
You don't know?
No.
Okay. Well, I was very impressed by your getting the James Bond answer, and discouraged, but Edward Lear was also a very noted ornithological illustrator and made his living that way.
Oh, really?
For a certain number of years. Mm-hmm.
Well, we sort of had
it. We were
around. Kind of.
A little bit.
You got 2.5 out of 3. I think.
All right.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Linda. Bye-bye. And Jerry, it's your turn.
All right. Which graduate of West Point had the most ever demerits in its history? And who is the only graduate of Annapolis to have 0 demerits? They're both very well-known people. Which graduate of West Point had the most ever demerits? Has had, I guess. And who is the only graduate of Annapolis with 0 demerits?
I'm not sure about the Annapolis one. The West Point, I want to say it's either...
Oh. You only get one guess.
Custer or Poe? Poe got thrown out, I know that. Is it one of those?
Is that a question?
Custer was the anchor man, or maybe that's at Annapolis, but the person lowest on the... it's one of those. Is it one of those?
Well, commit yourself.
Custer.
Correct.
All right.
Ah. George Armstrong Custer. Okay, now what about Annapolis?
I almost said Eisenhower because Eisenhower had a lot of demerits at West Point, too.
Oh.
Yeah.
Colin Powell.
Yeah, Annapolis. That's,
no,
that's
harder.
Much harder.
Yeah.
So it's a very famous person, obviously.
Yeah.
0 demerits.
Annapolis never had a demerit.
That's quite amazing because you can get demerits for having having shined your shoes or something.
Right.
But
right. Yeah. And it's a very famous person.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a 20th century person?
I can't tell you that. Not yet.
All right. Admiral Halsey.
No.
All right. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hey, is it me?
It is you.
Hey, guys, it's Alec in San Francisco.
Hi, Alec.
Hello.
I've got a few guesses and then a series of questions.
Mm-hmm.
So for the author who was knighted first, would that be Sir Walter Scott?
Not Sir Walter Scott.
Okay. For the Macy's Parade.
Although you got the Sir part right.
Well, yeah. I'm 1 for 3.
All right.
For the Macy's Parade, would it be Bullwinkle the Moose?
Yes, it is Bullwinkle the Moose. Very good. 1961.
Okay, and I have a guess about the guy from Annapolis with 0 demerits, just because he's squeaky clean, and I believe he went there. Is it Jimmy Carter?
It is Jimmy Carter.
Oh,
he is squeaky clean.
Boy,
very good.
How about that?
Excellent.
Okay, so my first question is, what was the first modern comic strip defined as having sequential panels and word balloons?
This is sort of Jerry's. More Jerry's.
Well, Mutt and Jeff.
No, before that.
Before that.
Ooh.
The Yellow Kid?
It is the Yellow Kid.
Right.
Oh.
Okay, why was he called the Yellow Kid?
Because that's where we get the term yellow journalism, because it was the comic strip was printed... I guess he was actually had a
wore a
he
yellow.
Wore like a yellow pajamas
right
like
yeah a, he wore a dress
a yellow dress
or,
yeah
that was all he could get yeah
right, right. So, strange looking kid yeah.
So you got both my second and my fourth question. So my only remaining question is, so even though there were word balloons in the Yellow Kid, the Yellow Kid's own speech did not appear in balloons. Where did it appear?
It was written on his clothes, wasn't it?
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, very good.
Right. Oh.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we do have a couple of lines open at area code 415-841-4134. Again, this is Minds Over Matter. We're here every Sunday at 7 at 415-841-4134. Our panel tonight is author Jerry Nachman and, of course, Pauline Teichman, a teacher and photographer at Berkeley and Alameda, California. And I'm your moderator, Dana Rodriguez. You're listening to us on 91.7 FM. That's KALW, your local public radio station. And Pauline and Church.
Okay, I'm going to give you some clues about three ghost towns, and if you can give me the names of the towns. So the first one was proclaimed the Silver Rush Ghost Town in, I believe, 2005, but fairly recently.
Why are you asking yes about these?
I want to know the names of the towns.
Oh, Silver, oh, okay.
Silver Rush Ghost Town. These are all in the States. All three of them
Silver
are in the
Rush
United
in California, all California?
Not in California, but all in the United States.
Okay.
The second one, this well-preserved ghost town was founded by Dr. Erasmus Darwin Levitt and was the site of a major gold discovery. And this last one is famous as a honeymoon stop for Clark Gable and Carol Lombard.
Hmm. Is there some particular...
You're saying that it's a ghost town now, or was it a ghost town then?
No, they were not ghost towns at the at a certain time.
Okay.
They're considered ghost towns now. Some of them are having a little bit of a tourist revival, but in terms of the population that actually lives there, it's very minimal.
Is there some particular reason why we might know these names? Like, were they famous boom towns at one time? That kind of thing?
Silver Rush sounds like it.
All three of them were famous at one point, and all three of them, I think, are now maybe parks, maybe not parks, but like some sort of historical thing attributed to
them. You would know the Gable Lombard.
I thought giving that part of the clue that you would know.
I don't know. Tombstone, Arizona?
No, but you're close.
Because I think they flew to Arizona.
Arizona, definitely.
Oh. See, I knew you'd
know. It's in Arizona. No, I have to think about that. Okay. And the number to join us is area code 415-841-4134, 415-841-4134. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, good evening. This is Big Radul from the Carneros.
Hello.
Hey, is one of the towns Columbia?
No.
Okay.
No, but...
I knew it was a ghost town, but I didn't know if it was gold or silver.
I think Columbia is actually gold.
Okay. I had a couple questions on movies and TV with a rodeo theme.
Okay.
In the early 70s, there were three movies with a rodeo theme. Can you give me the name and the lead actor?
What, in the 60s?
Yeah, 70s. No, early 70s.
All right, sorry.
The one that jumps out at me is Junior Bonner.
Played by?
Steve McQueen.
All right.
I remember Robert Preston and Ida Lupino were his parents.
Right.
Which is a pretty good movie. And let's see. Didn't Cliff Robertson make one too?
Yes.
Oh, okay. J.W. Coop.
Very good. And the third one?
Ay, ay, ay. It's harder now. Rodeo.
Maybe if you remember A Man Called Flint.
Huh. Flint. Oh, James Coburn?
Right. And the movie?
Okay, Dana, take
Coburn.
It.
Coburn. Yeah. No, I can't. I don't know it.
The Honkers.
Mm. Oh, okay. I've heard of it. I haven't seen it, but I've heard of it.
And I had a question about a TV rodeo show. It was in the early 60s, short-lived, called Stony Burke.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
And
the title.
Could you tell me the lead actor who played Stony Burke and his two sidekicks and their characters?
Oh
names?
No, I want to say Jack Palance, but it's not Jack, is it?
Well, the Jack part's right.
Okay, Jack.
He was better known and a long running series after this.
Jack.
Jack.
I remember that.
Jack Nars. Just kidding.
I remember that show. I remember the title of the show, Stony Burke.
I do too.
Welcome,
Dano. Oh, Jack Lord.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay.
Hawaii Five-0.
Should have gotten that.
And then there were two character actors who later became fairly well-known. They were basically sort of unknowns at the time, if you could name them and their characters.
Was Strother Martin one?
No.
But
there is a connection that Strother Martin was in a lot of movies with one of these guys.
Was Denver Pyle one?
No.
Okay.
There's kind of a Strother Martin, Sam Peckinpah connection.
All right. Oh, so was it Warren Oates or Ben Johnson then?
Warren Oates was Bess Painter.
All right.
And the second sidekick.
No, don't know.
It was Bruce Dern played E.J. Stein.
Oh, Bruce Dern. Okay. Uh-huh.
And one last thing is I wanted to ask if you knew the connection between Bruce Dern and FDR.
Hmm. Bruce Dern and FDR. You mean a family connection?
Well, not really family, but his family and FDR.
Hmm.
Yeah, I have the idea that he comes from a fairly well-to-do family. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's not a family connection. Was some member of his family, did they serve in FDR's cabinet or something?
That's correct.
Ay. Now I have to think of. Yeah, no, I don't know.
Secretary of the Interior Byrne.
Yeah. No, I don't think it was Morgenthau, though, you never know. Or Stimson or Frank Knox or somebody like that?
No, it was.
Francis
George
Perkins?
Dern was FDR's first Secretary of War.
Oh.
And he had been the governor of Utah.
What's his name again?
George Dern.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good question. Thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome.
All right. And, it's my turn. All right. What are the four things that restaurants, sit-down restaurant, what are the four things in a sit-down restaurant that have the highest profit margin that they serve?
Besides alcohol?
Yeah, besides alcohol.
Well, alcohol is obviously one of them.
Okay.
That's number two. What are the, okay, so I'm looking for the four things that you get in a sit-down restaurant that have the highest profit margin.
You don't mean a dish, you mean the actual, do you mean a dish?
Particular dish or a type of dish, like salad?
Or a generic thing? Like if I was going to say mashed potatoes.
It's a dish. Well, I mean, it's most of this is a dish.
French fries.
No.
Mashed potatoes.
No. No.
Pasta.
Yes. All right.
Oh, I know. Salad.
No.
No.
So you each got one.
Okay.
All right. So, yes, wine is a 600% profit margin, and pasta is an 800% profit margin. Yeah. Typical.
And which one did I get?
You got wine, I believe, didn't you?
Oh.
Somebody said wine.
Pauline said liquor, yeah.
All right. Well, okay. I'll give you some credit for it anyway. All right. So, of the four it's the four things that restaurants have the highest profit margin on. So far, we have wine and pasta.
So how about other drinks like soda?
Yes. Although I gave you your one already and you...
Well, I just took his.
All right. So now there's only one left.
I would think salad would be a huge profit margin.
It depends what type because...
90% lettuce.
Especially designer lettuces. Though.
Well, yeah, but, you know, most...
So far we have soft drinks, wine, and pasta. What is the last remaining... Of the top four things that restaurants have the highest profit margin on, what is that? What is that food? And, all right, let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is Phyllis in Berkeley.
Hi, Phyllis.
And I think it's Alfred Lord Tennyson.
It is not Alfred Lord Tennyson.
Oh, that was a good guess anyway.
It was a good guess.
I have a question for you, though. Mm-hmm. You know, in the days of sail, when the British Navy went all over the world, they took along all their supplies for long years. And, of course, butter was very hard to come by, and so only the senior officers got butter. What was midshipman's butter? They only got it in one part of the world, but it was very, very important to them.
Midshipman's butter. So it was sort of a butter substitute, or what they used in place of butter, anyway.
It was what they used in place of butter.
Smart balance.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't margarine, was it?
No.
Lard?
Was it lard? Or whale, like blubber of some kind?
Try to think outside of animals.
Okay, outside of animals. Oh. And they only got this in one part of the world.
Yeah. And it's only known as this in the British, it was the British Navy at that
time. Some sort of oil, like olive oil, or?
It wasn't oil, no.
Nutella.
Well, that's got lots of butter in it.
Oh, does it? Okay. Yeah, go on. Marmite.
And every time I buy one, I think I'm buying...
Vegemite.
Vegemite.
That's all the in it.
Every time you buy one, you think you're buying what?
I always think I'm buying midshipman's butter.
Oh, really? So but it's something very yummy. Huh?
So you buy it.
And it's not an animal product.
No.
Is it something can be gotten from a tree?
Yes.
Yes.
Even here in California.
Even here in California.
Peanut butter.
Oh. It's from a tree.
It goes underground.
Even here in California.
Coconut oil or something? Yeah. Huh?
Some sort of nut butter, like almond butter?
No, there's no nuts in
it. Palm? No, anything you do from a palm tree?
Nope.
No date? Does it
just
date?
Think of something you could spread.
Apple butter.
Yeah, spread. We can spread any of you. Can crush you? It enough. No, we give up.
Okay, it was avocados.
Oh, of course.
Very good. Yeah, that is like butter. Yeah.
Better than butter.
Yeah.
Green butter. Yeah.
Butter, Bill.
Okay, well,
midshipman's butter. I'll remember that.
Thank you so much. Hey. Bye bye. And Jerry, I think it's your turn.
Okay, well, I just remembered this. I didn't have it written down, but since we're talking about Christmas and Hanukkah, in Hebrew, what does Hanukkah mean?
Don't look at me.
Something about, well, it has to do with oil, because the Hanukkiah is where you burn the oil.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's so, the legend, yeah, right, uh-huh.
So, the miracle of oil.
No, one word.
Hmm. One word.
Oil? Just plain oil.
Mm-mm. No idea.
Candelabra.
No.
All right, why don't you repeat that question, Jerry?
What does Hanukkah mean in Hebrew?
All right. And if you'd like to join us, the number is area code 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. And we are just a little past halfway through the show, so let's repeat any questions that have not been answered yet. Jerry, what do you have?
What year was Christmas first recognized as a national holiday, and what does Hanukkah mean in Hebrew?
And the Christmas question is, you only mean in the United States?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, right.
Okay, I'm looking for three ghost towns in the United States. One of them was proclaimed a Silver Rush ghost town in, I believe, 2005. Second one was founded by Dr. Erasmus Darwin Levitt at the site of a major gold discovery in 1862. And the third was famous as a honeymoon stop for Clark Gable and Carol Lombard.
Does that Erasmus Levitt, does that name, does that mean anything? It's, I mean, is that
the reason I gave his name is because, yes, he was the one who found it, and he was a doctor, and he went as a gold rush person, but he ended up realizing he could make more money as a doctor.
Even today.
Yep.
Even then. Okay. And I give you a list of the four things that a sit-down restaurant serves that have the highest profit margin. Mm-hmm. So far we have soft drinks, wine, and pasta. What is the last thing on that list?
Can it be another drink, like bottled water?
No more drinks. No more drinks on that list.
Rice.
A bottle rice? Of water is about 99% to profit margin.
And
there's a huge percent on bottled water.
And, well, water was included in the
drinks.
I actually know the first British author to be knighted for his literary work alone.
Sir Walter Scott?
No. Somebody already guessed that.
Sir Walter Raleigh?
No.
No. Go through all the sirs.
Again, who was the first British author to be knighted for his literary work alone? And I guess that's
was it. Was he a poet or a playwright? Can you tell us?
I could tell you, but I'm not going to. I'm not going to tell you right now.
Okay.
Anyway, and let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Andrew in Oakland.
Hi, Andrew.
On the Annapolis grads with no demerits, you know, I'm trying to think of famous naval people and presidents. Of course, there was JFK, but I don't even know if he was Annapolis.
No, he was.
But I doubt if he
He wasn't.
He was a 90-day wonder.
He was well-behaved, even if he wasn't. But there was another very fastidious and well-behaved president who was famous for his submarine duty. And that was Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, you got it. Somebody got it before, but that's correct.
Oh, somebody did.
Yeah,
that's all right. We'll give you a bell anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, he worked under
Rickover.
Rickover, Hyman Rickover, yeah.
As mentor. Hanukkah, doesn't that just mean like dedication?
Dedication, exactly.
Good
very
job.
Good. Very good.
And I would have thought coffee would be the restaurant, you know, a restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's included the beverage, with the drinks, soft drinks and tea.
Oh, so just drinks in general.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So I have a question then.
Okay.
I just saw the movie Lincoln, which Spielberg tried to ruin, but he didn't. It's really quite wonderful. And so I was thinking about the Lincolns and his oldest son, Robert Todd Lincoln, had a lot of fateful things happen to him. Like he was nearby or present for three presidential assassinations, but there was another thing. And during the Civil War, late in the Civil War, it was like late 1864, early 1865, he was on a train platform in Jersey City, New Jersey. And he was sort of leaning against a car, and the train started moving, and his foot slipped in the space between the platform and the train, and he was like headed down into like at least serious injury, if not death.
He did not mind the gap.
Somebody grabbed him by the scruff of the neck and pulled him out, and he considered that his life had been saved, that it was really you.
Mm-hmm.
And the strange thing was the person who did this, the person who saved his life.
John Wilkes Booth.
Very close.
Edwin Booth.
Edwin Booth.
It was Edwin Booth.
Is that right? Really? Yeah.
I think I did. I think I have heard that.
That's a great bit of real trivia, yeah. If true, it sounds a little apocryphal, but maybe.
No, he himself told.
Oh, he did? Okay.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. And he, Todd Lincoln lived to be 82.
Yes.
He died in, not, you know, 1930s or something?
Yeah.
It was
26.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay, and wasn't he Lincoln's least favorite child?
I don't know about that.
I read that recently.
He was, by all accounts, rather stuffy.
Okay.
Pauline, I think it's your turn.
Okay. I'm going to go to a sports question. Name this person who revolutionized the high jump by perfecting and popularizing this technique that now bears his name and remains the dominant style used today.
The Fosbury flop.
Yep. Dick Fosbury.
Good job.
Fosbury. Right, you are. Okay. Yeah, so I'm going to ask another one. And this might have been asked on the show before. I don't know. What well-known entertainer won the city, San Francisco's, high jump championship? What well-known entertainer won the city's high jump championship?
Johnny Mathis, George Washington High School.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if he still holds the record, but
no, he's one of the top 15, and he was only 2 inches off from the Olympic record at the time.
Really? Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. one more sport.
All right, go ahead.
Who has the most career rushing yards in the Super Bowl?
Oh, gee. Jerry Rice?
No.
Is that a 49er?
No.
He's extremely well known, though, I would assume.
You know what? It's actually not a name that I knew, but considering how well I know American football.
Yeah, you have your nerve asking that question.
I know, I do, but hey, I gave two easy ones.
Okay, so it's a.
I figure people who do watch football will know.
Yeah, they would, yeah.
No idea.
So we'll leave it out there.
This is one guy that's not going to even guess.
Yeah, I'm not even going to guess. What did you say, Jerry Rice?
Jerry Rice.
Yeah. That's probably what I would have guessed.
Yeah.
It's one of the few names I know. Okay. So, all right, I'll throw in a question here, too. Besides Edmund Gwynn, there have been four actors who played Santa in other versions of Miracle on 34th Street. Let's see. One, two, three for made-for-TV movies and one for theatrical movie when they remade it for the theaters.
I don't even know it had been remade.
Yeah.
Under that title?
And all very well-known actors, too.
Under that title?
Yes. Yes. So four different actors have played the Edmund Gwynn role in Miracle on 34th Street in either TV versions or feature films since the original came out. And they're all quite well-known actors. So think of you.
Yeah, I don't think
that. One of them is an Oscar winner. So... the years are 1955, 1959, 1975, and 1994.
Gee whiz.
So. And.
You want not to anybody like Jim Carrey.
No.
No, no, no.
Well,
no.
Now I'm thinking in one of the late.
More films. Of a Santa type.
He's talking about the Santa Claus character.
Yeah,
the Santa
no,
Claus
I understand, character. But yeah. I don't know what he's been in. I know he's been in some Christmassy movies other than just Scrooge. Yeah.
And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Kevin in Los Angeles.
Hi, Kevin.
I take one of them, Santa's.
Yes.
Take the one from the mid-90s. That's Richard Attenborough.
Richard Attenborough. Oh. Right. Good.
Really? Okay. Wow. Okay. How about Dom DeLuise?
So actually, I take it back. There are two Oscar winners.
How about Dom DeLuise?
Not Dom DeLuise.
Well, he would have been good.
Oh, well, yeah, I suppose.
What? You're thinking the right type.
Yeah, yeah. Right. James Coco? No, okay.
What's up, Kevin?
I got a... list question for you guys.
All right.
This is a list of roles, excuse me, of David Bowie movie roles.
Oh.
He's a role, and you have to guess the movie.
All right.
So I'll give you the list, and I'll give it twice. I'll start off with a vampire.
Right.
An alien. The Goblin King.
Right.
Nikola Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
Pontius Pilate. Andy Warhol, a prisoner of war, and a hitman. I kind of put him in what I thought would be.
These are David Bowie movies.
These are all David Bowie roles.
Oh,
in movies, different movies.
And he wants the title.
Yes.
The vampire. The vampire is The Hunger.
Yes.
The alien is the one with Buck Henry. I almost said Brother from Another Planet, but of course that's not it. It's
I've never seen a David Bowie movie.
What is
oh
it?
Yeah, he's quite a good actor.
Man Who Fell to Earth. Thank you, Kevin.
Yeah,
got that.
Okay.
I think The Hitman was one of the early ones he was in, wasn't it?
One of his earlier roles.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I'm trying to remember.
Prisoner of War. He played a British officer in a Far Eastern concentration camp in, was it Good Morning, Mr. Something?
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Jones? Mr. Lawrence, sorry. I had the general idea. thank you, Kevin. And Andy Warhol.
I never saw.
Well, Nikola Tesla, that sounds a little familiar to me. It was just a small role, right?
Nikola Tesla?
Yeah.
It was let's say the largest of the supporting roles in this movie. I'll give you the director.
Okay.
It's Christopher Nolan.
Oh. Is that the one of the two magicians who are trying to outdo each other?
Yeah.
Is it The Prestige?
Yeah. Not The Illusionist, it's The Prestige.
The Prestige, okay. Right. Oh, Goblin King. Goblin King. Is that Labyrinth?
It is Labyrinth, yep.
Okay.
So you got Pontius Pilate, Andy Warhol, and Hitman. So I'll give you a clue. I'll tell you the director of the movie with Hitman, John Landis.
Oh.
Jeff Goldblum and Michelle Pfeiffer.
Oh, it's that. Oh, right. I know what movie you're talking about.
Andy Warhol is a movie about a young artist.
Oh, that's Basquiat.
Yeah,
right.
Is that it? You got him?
And Pilot.
Pontius Pilate. He wasn't in that Scorsese film, was he?
Yep, Pontius Pilate.
Oh, Temptation of, Last Temptation of Christ?
Yeah.
All right. Did we get everything?
The Hitman out there, maybe.
What's that? Oh, I can't remember the name of that.
Yeah, I was going to leave it out there, I guess.
Oh, okay, go ahead. All right, so we put...
Your producer, yeah.
All right, we'll put you on hold. Thank you very much,
okay,
Kevin.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, man. Bye.
And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Peter in Glen Park.
Hey, Peter.
Got a couple guesses here for the Christmas official year. How about 1873?
Very good. 1870.
Very good.
Great. And for the knighthood, was Isaac Newton knighted for Principia Matabecca?
No.
Okay.
I'm not saying he wasn't. Not just for his literary achievements, anyway.
All right. And for Ghost Towns, Pauline, are you thinking of Virginia City for the silver?
No. Though Virginia City is actually close to one of the other ones.
The only town close that I know to Virginia City is Gold Hill.
No.
All right. And for the Gold Rush, how about Bodie?
Bodie, that's a good guess.
That is a good guess, but no, it's not this one. This was an 1862 gold discovery.
All right, well...
And not in California, I can tell you that.
All right. I have a question.
Yes.
Why does the phrase hocus pocus have magical power?
Why does it actually have magical power, or why is it used for...
Why do people think that it does?
Okay. Hocus pocus.
You mean for what? Is it derived?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Does it have anything to do with its rhyming?
No.
Why is it hocus pocus?
I'll give you a hint. It's from the Latin.
I took 2 years of Latin, but I remember very little. No, I don't know. Anyway, anybody?
Well, if you know what hocus means in Latin,
yeah,
and pocus.
I know where hocus is.
Well, like ad hoc, you know, so would be like of this or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the pocus part I'm trying to figure out.
Of hocus. Hocus.
What did you say hocus was what?
Like, of this?
You better explain it to us.
It's from hoc est corpus.
Oh, the body.
Oh.
Which is the words in the Latin Mass where the bread is turned into the body of Christ.
Oh.
The good Jew.
Ah, interesting.
If they can produce that magic, then there's other magic as well.
Interesting. Thank you very much.
All
good
right,
question.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, that was great. Thank you.
Good night.
And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Yeah, hi, it's Harry and Susan in Berkeley.
Hi, Harry. Hi, Susan.
Wasn't there a question about the first TV, in Macy's Parade?
Yes, the question was, what was the first TV character to have a balloon in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade? And somebody did answer it, but if you have a guess, we'll let you guess.
Was it Mighty Mouse?
It wasn't Mighty Mouse. Mighty Mouse, I think, was second or third. It was Bullwinkle.
Oh, okay. One of the ghost towns, was it Silverado?
No. I guess there's way more than I...
There are a lot of ghost towns, yeah.
These were like the main three listed under ghost towns when I was looking, so sorry.
Okay, the third one on the author?
Yes.
Wasn't Arthur Conan Doyle, was it?
It was not. I mean, he was knighted, of course, you're right. But no, he was not. He was knighted a few years after the fellow I'm looking for.
And the only other thing is high return on food at a restaurant?
Yes.
The bread?
Well, the one I'm looking for is partially bread-related, I guess.
Crackers.
No, not crackers. No, not crackers. I'm sorry, what'd you say?
I said rolls.
No, not rolls.
How about pizza?
Pizza, that's correct.
Oh,
very good.
That one came from Susan.
All right, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
That explains why there's a pizza place on every block.
Yes, yes. That's a 500% markup over the actual cost. And let's see, if you'd like to join us, we have a few minutes left in the show at area code 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Let's see. Jerry, do you want to know? Okay, Pauline, do you have something quick?
No, I was not saying no. I was saying yes.
Okay. Well, I'll give you a chance. Don't worry.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Well, I'd see if you can identify these four names recently in the news. Mm. And you need three for a bell. Cassandra Perkins. Cassandra spelled with a K.
Who spells Cassandra with a K?
Well, this person. the names are spelled all kinds of ways. Mm-hmm. Mel Grieg and Michael Christian, that's a unit. And then Kai Suk Han, or Ki Suk Han, K-I hyphen S-U-C-K Han, H-A-N.
Okay, well, the second one is the pair of radio people who pulled the hoax.
That's
on,
right. Mel Grieg and Michael Christian.
That's horrible.
Terrible. All right, so what were the other two again?
Cassandra Perkins and Ki Suk Han, or Kai Suk Han. That's a real name. It's not a...
I believe you.
Cassandra Perkins sounds really familiar, and I'm...
And this is, within the last week or so?
Mm-hmm.
Cassandra Perkins. Mm-hmm. Can you give a general area for this? Cassandra Perkins?
It's a tragic event.
Mm. Oh.
But both of them were.
Oh, the one at the last one. Was that the one that was pushed into the subway in
New
York?
Oh, the guy pushed on off the subway.
Yes, platform. I did read about that.
So we're just looking for Cassandra Perkins.
Cassandra, and that was a tragic event, too.
Yeah.
Huh? Hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, we can leave that out. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
This is Bill in Daly City.
Hi, Bill.
Was one of the Santas Jim Backus?
No. It's not. One of Santas was not Jim Backus, but he played in Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol. He did the voice for that, which he dressed up as Santa toward the end. But not anything to do with Miracle on 34th Street.
And for a knighted British author, would that be Rudyard Kipling?
I believe he was knighted, but that after this person I'm looking for.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Yes, this is Tom from North Beach.
Hi, Tom.
And hello, I have a guest from the most Super Bowl yards rush.
Uh-huh.
Franco Harris.
That's
from the
absolutely right.
Steelers.
Oh, yeah, Franco.
Bell for you, 354 yards in four Super Bowls.
Franco, okay. What's his last name?
Yeah.
Harris.
Yeah. Good job.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you so much. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, Mike in Daly City.
Hi, Mike.
People are stealing my answers.
Oh, no.
Sorry.
Franco Harris and pizza. But anyway.
they go well together.
Yeah, they do.
Right. British author. About Thomas Hardy?
Not Thomas Hardy.
All right. And Cassandra Perkins, was she the murder-suicide victim in the Kansas City Chiefs?
Yeah, the football player who shot her and himself.
That's right.
That's all I got left.
Very good.
Thank you
so much. Ooh, okay. Let me see if I can throw in something here. Oh, actually, do you have something?
Yeah. Who is nicknamed the Mad Monk of Malibu?
Malibu?
Mm-hmm.
Malibu?
Mad Monk of Malibu.
I thought you guys would know.
Was that Larry Hagman?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
And so, follow-up question on that.
He just died.
What other famous person now owns his Larry Hagman's famous Malibu home, previous Malibu home? Mm. Another famous person now owns it.
TV person?
Not TV, but celebrity.
I don't know.
Singer. I'll tell you it's a singer.
A singer?
Singer.
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 A singer. Not Barbara Streisand.
No.
Oh, no.
I would think she's a neighbor down that way, right?
Yeah, probably. Is this a man or a woman?
Man.
It could be so many people. Yeah, we got to narrow it down.
Not American.
Oh. A singer.
This late in the game, that's a lot of clues.
Yeah, it is a lot of clues.
Elton John.
Non-American.
No, but you...
Is that close?
No.
Somebody I heard live this summer in love.
Really?
Really?
Huh. Jerry Vale.
Guns.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. No. All right. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello, it's Michael from El Cerrito.
Hi, Michael.
Wasn't there a version of Miracle on 34th Street with Sebastian Cabot?
There was.
Mm. Oh, yeah, indeed. He's perfect. Yeah.
Very good. And, 1975.
That's all halfway today.
Well, thank you very much. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi.
Hi.
Somebody mentioned Jim Carrey, and I'm going to ask you, what do you think the straightest role he's played?
Well, Andy, what's his name? He did, it was just on TV, the comedian, Andy, who died young.
Oh, I know who you mean.
Oh, no.
Andy, what's his name? You know.
Kaufman.
Andy Kaufman, yeah.
No, that's not it.
You mean the most non-comedic role.
Exactly. Straight arrow.
Straight arrow?
Oh, he's done some straight roles.
Not a lot of them.
He made a made-for-TV movie about doing time on Maple Drive, and which was a drama. And
no, not of that.
And
just had a very fine old-time actor that we all adore.
He made a movie called The Majestic.
That's it?
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Who do you play?
He played just a guy I don't know. He has amnesia or something.
Oh, I thought she said he played an old-time actor.
No, there's
an old-time actor.
And Martin Landau's in it, and James Whitmore, I think, is in it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it takes place in the 50s, and they claim he's a communist and blah, blah, blah. It was wonderful.
Thank you very much. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello, I believe that's me.
It is you.
Jerome, Arizona, for one of the ghost towns.
No, one of the towns is in Arizona, but it's not Jerome. I can tell you at this point, it's early in game. One's in California and was declared a gold rush town by Governor Schwarzenegger. One's in Montana, and the third one, the one with Clark Gable and Carol Lombard's in Arizona.
Okay, that's the only ghost town I know in Arizona. I got a traffic ticket there once.
Oh, no.
It's not a ghost town.
Though. I was saying, not ghostly enough, apparently.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for the time. I realize you're running out of it.
Well, we appreciate it. Thank you. All right, time to clean up here. What do we got, Jerry?
I'm at squeaky clean.
All right.
Okay, I just have my ghost town. So the Silver Rush ghost town was Calico, California.
Calico.
Yes, the well-preserved ghost town, major site of gold discovery was Bannock, Montana. And the famous ghost town where Clark Gable and Carol Lombard honeymoon was Oatman, California.
Oh, I wouldn't have gotten that.
Oatman, right. Arizona.
Actors who played Santa in other versions of Miracle on 34th Street. Thomas Mitchell played him on TV in 1955.
Sure.
And Ed Wynn played him in another TV version in 1959. I don't think of Ed Wynn as Santa Claus, but oh well, that's me. The first British author to be knighted for his literary work alone, that was Sir William Gilbert of Gilbert and Sullivan. Yes. Yes, I think that's it for me. If we did not get to your call, we do apologize. Please remember that Minds Over Matter is here every Sunday at 7 p.m. Our panel tonight was author Jerry Nachman, Pauline Teichman, of course, teacher and photographer. Thank you very much, Pauline. I've been your moderator, Dana Rodriguez. Our thanks to Kevin Vance and, of course, Steve Wolcott for handling the board and phones. And above all, our thanks to you for taking the time to tune in and call in. Be careful with your Christmas shopping. Take care, everybody. Join us next Sunday at 7. Bye-bye.
You can't miss, it's got to be your brother. Can't you see it's got to be one way or the other? If it ain't full, it's blank. If you don't spend, you bank. If it ain't bean, it's frank. It's got to be this or that.